You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The stage is set. The destination, New York City. The field of battle, Rockin' Riley's Pub. The grand prize, Fantasy Baseball Glory. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network's coverage of Tout Wars starts now.
Welcome to day number three of Tout Wars coverage here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm Mike Blewett, along with George Kurtz and Matt Modica will join us for the first hour. He's going to be drafting today. He did some drafts all throughout the weekend, so we'll get some good inside tips from him and get some recent experiences as to how the drafts played out. But we thank you for joining us on the Roto Experts in the morning. We'll be here until 10 o'clock, at which point we'll hand it off to Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha. Al Melchior and friends will be here. Tony Cicada will be on air for most of the day intermittently, but he'll be on for a majority of the day as he helps us with our Tout Wars coverage. Again, yesterday was a great day for having guests stop by, getting a lot of expert experience and knowledge dropped to us by those expert players. George, I would first say hello to you. How are things this morning?
Still dealing with death here in the sore throat.
That's tough.
You know, I'm pushing through.
That's like a high ankle sprain for a broadcaster when you have a sore throat. But Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Super Sunday. Very excited today. It's been a great weekend, like just hanging out with everybody, from seeing the industry people, my friends in the high stakes arena. Just a wonderful time altogether.
Yeah, it's been great catching up with some people that we haven't seen in some time, and we're going to get into your draft a little bit later. You did a draft yesterday afternoon. Is that accurate? The NFBC main event you had yesterday around 1 o'clock?
That is correct, and I had the first pick.
Right, and you went with Clayton Kershaw, correct?
Yeah, we went Kershaw. I went Kershaw yesterday. I'll be going Trout in a couple hours today.
And you have a draft at 10 o'clock today, and that is another NFBC main event. That's a 15-team, 5x5 snake draft, 30 rounds, and there's a lot of industry people in that as well. Some of the guys who we saw yesterday, Chris Liss and Colton and the Wolfman, the dynamic duo, and some other people as well. So good luck with that, and I kind of appreciate you splitting the baby there. One Kershaw, one Trout. You know, as George said yesterday, he would go Trout both times, but why not take a different approach and see how you can build the team a little bit differently? It's difficult to get Kershaw, so if you have the number one pick, that's the surest way to get him.
Yeah, well, one of the things I wanted to not have all my eggs in one basket in fantasy football this past season. I am a Bills fan, for disclosure, unfortunately.
Sorry.
But I just loved Sammy Watkins. I broke it down with the stats. I mean, he just had to stay on the field.
You and Corey Parson just all in with that guy. And he's a great player. But
yeah, unfortunately. And I figured the Bills' defense wasn't going to be bad, so I was right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have to throw. But I took him in like the second round of pretty basically every draft, and, you know.
Yeah, but maybe you shouldn't be taking a play against hurt every year.
Yeah,
maybe
you know,
you
just hope.
Well,
you know what's happening to me this year? It's kind of becoming like Giancarlo Stanton's that guy. I mean,
oh yeah. Once again, yeah. But if you take Stanton and you get busted by him, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah, no. I mean, the thought process on this is the year. Everybody, a lot of people are off of him, and hopefully this is the year he puts up 145, 150 games. If that happens, I'm looking at it as. Power is on the rise in MLB, and I don't think it's going away. If you watch the WBC, people love the home runs. MLB is really loving the home runs, as you know, everybody hit home runs last year.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. George nailed it, and I expect more. So if that's the case, you need to have abundant power. Everybody says, oh, you could wait, get late. You need those guys that produce every year in it. You're at.
Yeah, I mean, Stanton has played that 145 mark twice in his career, way back in 2011. When he was 21 years old, played 150 games. He had 34 homers in that season. And back in 2014, he led the league with 37 homers. He played 145 games on the nose, had a .555 slugging, almost 300 total bases. So that's the kind of production you're looking for, is hopefully he matches that 2018 year where he had 37, 105, hit .288, .395 on base, obviously, if the guy plays enough games, the numbers will come. So that's obviously been the bugaboo for him the last couple of seasons. Only 119 last year, 74 in 2015. So, you know, I don't think we need to pour over the strategy of putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, it's good luck to you, and hopefully he's able to put up a good number of games. But again, we'll get into that a little bit later. Certainly, we had the AL-only draft yesterday morning at 9 o'clock, and that was ongoing for quite some time. Let me refresh right here. Our buddy Nando DeFino, he hung in there yesterday. I just want to take a quick look at his team. You know, we always joke about how it's the Nando DeFino All-Stars, and he's going, you know what? He did it. He was saying he was going to go hard on Twins, so he's got Byung-ho Park. He got him at $6. He got Byron Buxton at $21, Miguel Sano at $22. As we keep going down through, I think he may have limited the Twins to those three, but he still went hard on Twins. Adrian Beltre is probably his most outstanding hitter.
I think, honestly, he got Byung-ho Park, and they're saying that he's going to be the starting opening day DH. He's having a great spring. Vargas, who went to the WBC, and then I think he has a foot injury now. So it looks like a clear path for Park. And this is a guy who's killing it in the spring. Last season, he did have a wrist injury. We were expecting immense power from him, and I think people who take him now, I took him in the 22nd round yesterday. I mean, I think he's going to be the guy, and I think he's going to show some good things in 2017.
And he's wearing the Twins cap to prove his point, George.
How's his OBP? Was he going to finish ignoring that yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday was all about average for me. But I mean, I do like some of the things that Nando did. He got Miguel Sano, who in an OBP league is a hell of a lot more attractive player. You don't have to worry about a .236 batting average. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're getting hopefully 45 home runs.
You know, Nick Castellanos, he got at $19. This guy we've talked about a lot. But, you know, at first glance, I think Nando's going to be fighting a little bit uphill with this team just versus some of the other guys. Versus some of the other guys out there like Colton and the Wolfman. They jumped all over some players early. Like Yu Darvish and Abreu and Lucroy and Cano, as we outlined yesterday. They also got Pedroia and Mookie Betts in there. So those guys are off and running. But we'll see how Nando's able to fare. He said he was going to go after some Twins. Just frankly, I think in some instances, guys that were going to have a lot of playing time and have the ability to fail and not get benched, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like Byron Buxton, the Twins are at the point with him. He's an immense talent that, you know, he's had some struggles with a number one top prospect. He showed what he could do last September. I know some people don't really care about September. They think, you know, it's watered down. But he hit 9 home runs, and most of them are off of, like, Justin Verlander, Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Kelvin Herrera. These are top-quality pitchers. And he's a guy that, if he shows his speed, on speed alone, he can earn for you. So what do the Twins have to lose currently? He should be leading off every day, learning. This year should be the year where he is the leadoff hitter. No matter what, let him get, you know, let him take his hits and let him rise, hopefully, by the half. You know, at some point, because I personally believe in the talent.
Your thoughts on Buxton, George, for this
season? I'm on board with Buxton as well. I don't think he's going to have the breakout, you know, a Hall of Fame season, but I'm interested. He did come on late last season. Now, we don't know where he's going to bat. Amaldo just come out and said he's not going to bat first, not going to bat ninth. They've actually been fooling around with batting in third. So that's intriguing somewhat there. The kid's got power. I think people don't realize that. People just think he's all running. That's it. No power. He's actually got some power there. He could be a 20-20 guy. Wouldn't shock me at all. Average, I think, will take a little bit of a hit. But, yes, I am interested in Byron Buxton.
Yeah, just a couple of updates, injury updates. David Price's latest check-in with Boston's medical staff showed strength gains in his left elbow, which led to the first gradual step of a throwing program yesterday. Throwing was a short game of catch, but a welcome step forward nonetheless. Strength improvements to the point of putting the ball back in his hand a little bit more consistently, said manager John Farrell. Today's the first step for that, a short game of catch. That's what he's going through. So not off a mound. We still got a while, I think, here. This does not – just the language being used and the program that they're talking about, we got a while before David Price is back in the mix, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I was buying the bounce back early before the injury, and he was somebody I was very interested in. But I just don't see why somebody wants the headache. I know if he comes back in 2 months, you could get a really good pitcher if he does stay healthy. But these stories don't always work out too well.
George, your thoughts on what can you even expect at this point? He's got to be toxic when it comes to a draft at this point, because you really don't know when he's going to come back.
Yeah, I'm not touching him. I mean, listen, everyone has a value at a certain point. He's there around 20. Okay, that's value. But to use a pick where is anybody else I'm remotely interested in, I'm not going to go that direction. You're seeing it all over the place. I don't care what the Red Sox say. You know, that's all, you know, well, rose-colored glasses and all that stuff. Maybe he's healthy. Maybe he's getting healthy. Maybe he's not. You know, are they going to baby him? 5 innings and gone? 6 innings gone? 80 pitchers? 90? 100? We don't know. So he's not even going to be around there to get wins a lot of times. Maybe he's not going to pitch well when he comes back. Maybe he's so worried about tearing the elbow, he's not going to be the same pitcher. There's just too many things for me to be concerned about here. Not touching him.
Yeah, like these types of stories to me, when you see pitchers, we're going to baby him right here. We won't have him throw off a mound for a while. It just has the look to me of guy that will come back and then make 3 starts and they'll shut him down.
Yeah, well, I think what George said was very important. If he comes back and it's still in the back of his mind that his elbow might, you know, blow out, and he starts compensating a little or tweaks just a little tiny bit of something, you know, he might not be the same guy anyway. He might not be putting the, you know, he's had pinpoint command his career. That's been, you know, one of his calling cards. Mm-hmm. So things might change, and Fenway is pretty cruel on lefties to begin with, even though I do like Chris Sale this season. It's pretty cruel on left-handers historically. So, I mean, it's really tough.
Price, currently, according to NFBC ADP, is the 71st overall pick, 18th starting pitcher off the board. That has been a market change from where we were before the injury. And honestly, I think it's probably even lower than this.
71st is at 6th round.
Yeah, I know. So I think in practical terms, he's got to be much lower than this.
Double that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking David Price is probably averaging in most drafts, especially in expert drafts. I mean, you could tell me based on what happened yesterday. If you look it up, we'll figure out exactly when he was drafted. But I'm guessing expert drafts, that's a double-digit round pick at best.
Price yesterday went...
Did he go round 12 yesterday?
Yeah, he went round 12.
So there you go. Round 12 is what the experts are looking at for David Price. Somebody's willing to take a shot there.
And that's an AL-only league.
Right. Well, that's a great point. That's a great point. So, you know, we'll see how this continues to play out. But for those of you that had high expectations for David Price, I would imagine that you could put those to bed. Jason Kipnis, a couple of things on the injury. Jason Kipnis has taken the first step back towards the Indians lineup. He resumed baseball activities Friday, continuing his comeback from a right shoulder injury that has kept him sidelined for most of the spring. Terry Francona said that Kipnis took some swings in the batting cage, did some light throwing, expected to open the season on the 10-day disabled list, and it could be another 3 to 4 weeks before he's cleared to play in major league games. So that 10-day disabled list, that's just kind of managing... That's just managing the roster at this point. Really, the important part is it could be a month before we see him.
Yeah, the shoulder, like they said early on in the spring, that it was nothing of concern. And, you know, once they even start bringing that up, you have to be cynical. You know, they're just doing a little PR thing. Can he come back in a month? Say he does, is he going to be the same player? Is he not going to get injured again? I believe he went in the 18th round yesterday of my draft. Which, I mean, if he comes back, that's a hell of a bargain. You know, you're taking a shot. It's not going to sink you. That's fine, I think. But it's the thing I'm talking about with, like, Price and Kipnis. There is a cost, though, because you're not going to drop these guys and you're going to hold them.
That's right.
And if you play in a league with a short bench, that's gonna handcuff you. Like, there's going to be guys you're going to want to pick up. Or maybe you have to drop somebody else on your bench that you like and that guy pans out later on. So, I mean, you have to weigh everything. You know, you have to, so there's cost.
Your thoughts about Kipnis?
I think everything Matt said, I agree with. I'll throw this in there as well. Shoulder injury. Even if he comes back to be able to play, who'd say he can drive the ball anymore?
I totally agree with you. That would be the thing I'd be worried about. For me, it's almost an undraftable situation because he does come with a price. He hasn't dropped totally off the radar to the extent that, say, Price has. In some expert drafts. So there's a price associated with it.
And well, if he went round 18 yesterday, he's dropped.
Yeah, but, that's true. But in the AL only, I think he went for like $16. Like they were pretty much, you know.
That's not that much of a bargain.
Yeah.
$8, $9 on his price.
Wow. I was pretty shocked by that.
Yeah. So, sorry, George, I sort of interrupted there. But, I mean, you could sacrifice any power that he may have had.
Yeah, that's always the issue there with a shoulder injury, that the drive just may not be that he can hit, but he can't drive the ball. So there's always a concern there. And once again, with any injury, I think Matt and I both said it, you're always worried that in the back of the player's mind, they know they're hurt. So they're not letting it loose. You know, so it's a risk. And if snake draft, you're going round 18 beyond, I don't really have an issue with it. Anybody at that point, fine, give it a shot, see what happens here. But I'm not paying $16 in an auction.
Well, two words real quick, Michael Brantley.
But yeah. He had multiple.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, you know, just think about the shoulder, and if it does deteriorate.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. So we'll get into Matt's team that he was able to draft yesterday in the NFBC main event at 1 o'clock. Talk a little bit about that draft in general and how he put his team together. So it's Mike, George, and Matt for the next 3 hours on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back, Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike, George, and Matt. By the way, hit us up on Twitter today, at Fantasy Sports Radio. That's at FNTSY Radio. You can hit me up at Mike Blewett. Matt Modica will be at CTM Baseball, and George Kurtz is at George Kurtz. Give us a call today if you like at 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. We're going to have some guests rolling in here in the next hour, in the 8 o'clock hour. The Tout Wars weekend and coverage continues, but the NL only draft starts today at 10. Did we confirm that?
Yes, we did.
It was 9, but it's at 10 o'clock. So we'll have guests rolling in here probably in the 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock hours. Tony Sincotta will be joining us a little bit later. It's to be determined exactly what time he'll get here, because he's going to be here, frankly, most of the day.
I have the over-under at 8:45.
All right. I'll take the under, actually.
Wow, you have faith.
Yeah. What would you?
He was late yesterday.
I'm going to go over. I saw Tony eating some wings, and he had an adult beverage in his hand at about midnight. So.
It's all right. Tony's used to sleeping 2.5 hours and getting up.
He showed up late yesterday, though. What time did he get yesterday? Literally afternoon.
I'm not going to call the guy lazy. He's going to be on the air for about 8 hours today.
He's on three different shows, right?
He came in from Florida, so good on him. We'll see what time. I will take the under, though. I think it maybe could be like an 8:30 appearance. But we were talking during the break a little bit about March Madness and the tournament and all that kind of stuff. So Oregon and Gonzaga make it to the Final Four. Gonzaga's first time there, sort of monkey off their back scenario. I think they dodged a bullet by not having to play Arizona again. It's on Arizona for kind of blowing it down the stretch against Xavier. But the Oregon-Kansas game, Oregon was on fire. I mean, they were just hitting every shot. They were on fire from three. They're at one point in the middle of the second half, they were at 60% from three-point land. So Kansas didn't play their best game, but in a game, when a team is shooting like that, I don't think there's anything you're really going to be able to do.
Well, I think what was really shocking, too, is Oregon lost one of their really good players.
Yeah, Boucher. You
know, so that's, I mean, I figured Kansas was on it. I mean, I don't follow college basketball that much, but I do like to watch the games on Saturday afternoon, and I was into the tournament, and I thought it was Kansas night heading into last night, but I was absolutely wrong.
I did, too. The one thing I'll say about Oregon is that they should have lost to Rhode Island in round two. Rhode Island had them dead to rights. Oregon pulled it out somehow. Rhode Island made a lot of bad plays down the stretch. They are amongst all the bigger upsets that could have happened in this tournament. I think they're the team that's probably the most sick about it. I hate to use the term choked, but Rhode Island had a very tough last couple of minutes in that game, and Oregon should not have beaten them. Fast forward to the next game, they played Michigan. Michigan had them, too, and Oregon made a huge mistake at the end of the game and got away with it. They were supposed to foul that shooter, Walton. The coach told them to foul him because they had a foul to give. They didn't, and he gave them a wide-open look at a three, and it looked good, and it just rimmed out. So it is what it is. You know, that's what's crazy about this tournament. People use the term over and over, survive and advance, but it remains true each and every year. It's never the best. It's not always the best team that wins or the best teams that go to the Final Four, but it's just the team that kind of survives in those ways. You know, Villanova had a very tremendous stretch of games last year that they put together, but even the championship game, you know, that game could have gone either way. I was at that game, actually, and it really could have gone either way. Did they outplay Carolina? I thought they did over the course of that game, and they deserved it, and they destroyed Oklahoma in the semis. So it really is about just surviving and getting away with it. You know, UConn, the Shabazz Napier team from a couple of years ago, they were done in the first round. They played St. Joe's, who was a really good team, and St. Joe's had them and, again, made some bad plays late in the game, UConn pushed it to overtime, they win. They should have lost in the first round. They won the whole thing.
Yeah, sometimes you just need those lucky little bounces here or there. I mean, you have to be good to create your own luck. And sometimes these teams, these smaller schools, you do feel really bad for them. You know, it's like heartbreaking. Rhode Island was a team that I picked to go to the Sweet 16, but you know, didn't happen.
It did not. So, moving on, I just wanted to address that since we got two teams in the Final Four, and North Carolina will play Kentucky today, and Florida right across the street here. We are in Midtown Manhattan, Studio 34 in Rockin' Riley's. Across the street is Madison Square Garden, and that will be Florida against South Carolina. So the SEC guaranteed at least one team today, possibly two, if Kentucky pulls off a slight upset over North Carolina, who I think is the best team in the country when everybody's playing their best. So, moving on to Matt's draft from yesterday. He had the number one overall pick. It's a 15 team. It was a snake draft, so we're not dealing with auction values on this one. Typical 5x5 scoring?
That's correct.
Okay, so you went with Clayton Kershaw, number one overall. We kind of detailed that. You're going with Trout today when you also have a number one pick. George continues to lament the fact that he never gets a number one pick. But
that's not fair.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw goes number one overall. You wait, so coming all the way back, just looking at that, there's no real surprises there. Bryce Harper goes seventh. Josh Donaldson, Trey Turner. Charlie Blackmon, 13. Scherzer, 14. So two pitchers in the first round. It's Kershaw and Scherzer in the top 14 picks. Correa finishes the first round. Syndergaard actually goes pick number 16. So effectively, could have been a first-round pick there.
If I had the 15th pick, I really like that. Syndergaard and Carlos Correa. I think Carlos Correa is going to have a big season. He could possibly. He's my pick for AL MVP.
So there you go. And that's over, guys.
I'll go with Trout.
Yeah, that's over guys like Mike Trout and Mookie Betts and Jose Altuve. So you obviously have a lot of confidence in him. Josh Donaldson, Manny Machado, all guys that were picked in front of him. So clearly you have a lot of confidence in him. But in any event, you go all the way down and get Nelson Cruz at 30. Were you surprised that he got him, or you kind of expected that he might be there?
I figured I had a very good chance of getting him, and it was pretty much the three players I was looking for. Being that I started Kershaw, I did have to catch up in the hitting categories, and it was going to be Cruz, Stanton, or Brian Dozier for me, because Brian Dozier scores 100 runs every year. I figure he's going to hit around maybe 28 to 32 home runs, steal 15 bases. So for me, that's and play a infield position. So those were the three guys I was looking at. But I figured at that point to go Cruz, Stanton, go with the power. As we mentioned earlier, home runs are up. So.
All right, so Cruz and Stanton, you get there. It's kind of what you were hoping for, right? That's mm-hmm. the best of both worlds. Francisco Lindor goes right after Giancarlo Stanton. Edwin Encarnacion goes right in front of Cruz. You continue to go. I'm trying to find out where Dozier went on this.
I would have went with Edwin Encarnacion there. I would have probably went Cruz Encarnacion.
Got it. Okay.
If he would have lasted to me.
Okay. So, George, no issues with this so far. Obviously, building the team, those first three guys can't complain about when you have the number one overall pick, right?
No, Kershaw, Cruz, Stanton? I don't have any issues with the no.
I'm trying to find out where Dozier is on this board. It's a little difficult to read it. But you come back, you swing back, and you get Edwin Diaz, who's a guy that I think there's been a lot of buzz about him this weekend in particular because people like the way he's throwing. People like the way he looks. He's got the job in Seattle, and you wanted to lock in a guy that you think could be the closer for the whole year. Young player, too. He's only 22.
Yeah, one of the things about Diaz, besides watching him in the WBC the past 2 weeks, is when he first came up with Seattle, you knew immediately he was the best guy in that bullpen. And it didn't take him long to become the closer. I mean, he is still young, but as I've mentioned yesterday about like the Seattle stack that I would do, I think Seattle's a very good team. And he should have plenty of opportunities. And I consider him one of the high-end relief pitchers.
Yeah. So, George, you're the closer guy. Sorry, I'm eating. But Edwin Diaz is somebody that I feel like has picked up some momentum here in the last couple of weeks. We didn't talk about him as much a couple of weeks ago, but now we're seeing him. You know, he's the here. He's the last pick in the fourth round. So, he's got a lot of value attached to him at this point.
I agree, Matt. I think he is one of the. I'm not going to put him up there with Chapman, Britton, Jansen, but he's the next level for me. I have no issues with him. If I can get him in all my drafts, I'm pretty happy with it. I'm not worried about Sashek or anybody else taking his job there. The kid's got good stuff. Maybe you want to, if you're going to play devil's advocate, maybe you want to point out that I do expect Seattle to compete this season. So there'll be more pressure on him that way. I could see that being a problem, sure, but it's not going to shy me away from him. Like I said, I'm not going to draft the closer in round five in most leagues. There'll be some different leagues where maybe I will for different rules. The Kate the Nine yesterday, yes, that would have forced me to draft closers earlier. But other than that, like I said, I could see him drafting round eight, round nine. My number one closer, the guy, when I draft closers, my first closer, I want to be somebody who I'm fairly certain is going to have the job all season. Diaz fits into that.
Yeah. So this is the last pick of the fourth round, but in a 15-team league. So keep that in mind when you're talking about the value. It's amazing that you did this because I feel like you're messing with me now. I drafted John Segura again in the fifth round, the first pick of the fifth round. This is the Segura show. We end up talking about him all the time. So you like him. I mean, there's your middle, one of your middle infielders.
Honestly, he hasn't been a guy that I was really targeting at all this, you know, leading up to draft season. He's been an intriguing player, a player that I really haven't been able to wrap my mind around. But I think he's going to score the runs. But the problem here is there's no trading in this league. So, you know, you just have your fab budget for the season. And at that point, I needed speed. Billy Hamilton, I probably would have taken just to go along with that Stanton-Cruz combo to get the power.
He went one pick before Edwin Diaz. So,
and he does play second base and shortstop, so I figured I had to do that at that time. You know, if I would, I didn't want to jump Jose Peraza, who played like 2 months last year. And
That guy's draft value has skyrocketed, too. Those types of players worry me. Guy with a very small sample size, and people are excited about him. But he's an inexperienced player, and you're going to attach yourself to a guy that it could go badly, right, before he figures it all out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I planned on, in my mind, what a perfect world for me would have been Kershaw, Stanton, Cruz, Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks has been there, but once we get to the live events, the pitching, as you can see on the board, just gets extremely pushed up. And I missed Hendricks by three picks.
Yeah. One thing I would point out, you said Dozier. He actually didn't go for another round and a half, and you were willing to take him there. Mm-hmm. If Cruz or Stanton had been taken, you were willing to take him a lot higher than he ended up going. So any thoughts there why that might have happened? Do you think he might be a little higher on Dozier than others?
No, I think pretty much this whole season for the ADP, his ADP in the NFBC has been around like 32. I think the problem with yesterday's thing is everybody kept pushing pitchers. So with the pitchers moving up, people did not want to be left without an ace. So that kind of pushed him down. I was like praying he would come to me at the last pick in the fourth round, but I knew that wasn't going to happen.
George, your thoughts on Brian Dozier in general?
I'm good with him. I don't think he's going to hit all the home runs he hit last year. He won that streak in the second half, which is just incredible. He's hitting a home run every night. Mm-hmm. He was DFS gold.
Yeah.
Absolutely a must start in that format. In a daily game. I think he's a good player. I do a power-speed combo, which is always nice. I'll take him in all my leagues. I have him about top 30-35 player, so around three, round four.
And to Matt's point about the pitching getting pushed up, which we have seen consistently in drafts and certainly in expert drafts. So only the two starting pitchers go in the first round is Kershaw and Scherzer. But then after that, round two is Syndergaard, Bumgarner, Kluber, Sale, Darvish in order. Then following round, DeGrom, Strasburg, Cueto, Arrieta, Lester in order. Fourth round, Jansen, Carlos Martinez, Aroldis Chapman, Chris Archer, Justin Verlander, Masahiro Tanaka, Kyle Hendricks, and Edwin Diaz. So starting pitchers and relievers alike, you guys went after them pretty hard. That's a lot of pitchers in the first four rounds.
Yeah, the toughest decision for me was when I went with Kenta Maeda. I honestly really wanted to take James Paxton there. But I said, if I wait one more turn, I think maybe he might be there, or at worst case, Rich Hill. And I have said that I would not have a problem doing a Dodgers stack. So being that I had Kershaw, I went Maeda, and then I figured I'd go for broke with Rich Hill and Lance McCullers.
You did get that. We'll take a quick break here. We'll actually talk about that after the break and the Dodger stack that Matt pulled off. So it's Mike, George, and Matt back after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I would say that an important part of your draft preparation should be gaining our exclusive Edge package. And the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package for 2017 is here. So stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. So enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. So back to Matt's team. We had Segura in the fifth round. You said Kenta Maeda in the sixth round, Adrian Beltre, and then Rich Hill. So you started talking about it before the break. Kershaw, Maeda, Rich Hill, you're all in on the Dodgers. Pitching in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good place to live. Chavez Ravine, I lived in L.A. for 4 years, and I was not too far from there, so I would go to a lot of Dodger games. I think it's just, for pitchers, that's where you want to be. Except for the week that they have in Coors, that's going to be maybe a little painful. But, you know, that second turn where, after Maeda, the Rich Hill, Lance McCullers, the thought process there was, if one of these two guys pop, then that's going to be a home run. You know, I have Kershaw as the foundation. It killed me not to take James Paxton, but I took the gamble that maybe he'd come back to me, and he did not.
So, George, thoughts first on the two Dodgers pitchers, Maeda and Rich Hill.
Solid guys. I mean, Rich Hill found the fountain of youth. I don't know, sold his soul. Anyway, you want to? I mean, well, how? I don't have
still,
no
I
idea
still
how that worked out.
Yeah, I mean,
they really figured out at the age of what, 35, 34? Ex-Yankee too. It doesn't make me feel any better about that. So I'm surprised, but listen, he's getting the job done. Pitches in Chavez Ravine, pitches ballpark. So I like everything about him. I would say SP3 for me as far as fans is concerned. He's not going to knock your socks off, but he does. He just pitches. He knows how to pitch. God bless. I have no idea why he's able to do it. I don't know. Maeda, I think, has too much hype, and I'm not buying into it all that much. I had him for a while last year in a couple of teams. He was solid. I just don't. Another guy, he's sort of like a Rich Hill type. Doesn't blow you away. Knows how to pitch, which most Japanese pitchers do. A professional. But I don't. I just don't like the hype because I don't see a massive upside coming here. So I like both guys. I would have them on my teams. SP3, SP4 range.
Yeah, so they pushed up. And on McCullers, Lance McCullers.
I like McCullers. I think I don't think there's enough hype on him. Listen, I get the history. He can't pitch, going to get hurt, going to break down, whatever it is. He's a guy I want to take a chance on. I'd like him on. What did he go for, $9 yesterday?
Yeah, I believe he stayed single digits.
Yeah, I think it was $9. I thought that was a great buy. Might have been Chris Liss who got him. Not 100% sure on that. But I thought that was a great buy. And I think that could be one of the steals of that draft yesterday. Listen, there's a gamble there because he may not be able. You know, for one, he's going to get hurt in April, and that's it. But if he can stay healthy, he's also the key to the Astros, by the way, because they need pitching, good solid pitching. When you look at that rotation, if he can stay 25 starts, anything plus that, I think he's fantastic.
And you got him first pick, ninth round in the 15 team league. So I think from a strategy standpoint, as you said, if one of those guys pops between Hill and McCullers, you don't need them both to be great. You need one of them to help you out. You know, it pushes Maeda basically up to your number two, but then you got Hill and McCullers at 3-4. One of those guys works out. You're in good shape. Going down your team a little bit further, well, actually, give me your thoughts on McCullers first. You mentioned that you need one between Hill and McCullers to pop. Why would you make the argument that it's going to be McCullers?
What we saw last year, the control was an issue, but the dominance was... I mean, when he was on the hill, he was one of the most dominant pitchers at times. He has one of the best curveballs in the game. So the injury history, as was stated, is concerning. But as George said, Houston needs pitching. So they're going to need Lance McCullers. I think they're going to try and manage him throughout the year. I've heard them talk. I believe it was A.J. Hinch. He said, we don't want to have to be in a situation where we got to shut somebody down. And if you look at Aaron Sanchez last year, he went from, what, 90 innings to like 190 innings. So there is ways to do it. You can manage pitchers. Look, they can get hurt if they pitch, you know, 80 innings, if they pitch 170 innings. So at some point you have to let these guys try and pitch, and you have to monitor.
So. Yeah, to this point in his career, he's going to be his age 23 season. Last year, he had 14 games, 14 starts, only threw 81 innings. But as you said, he had a 3.22 ERA. The WHIP was pretty high, but you know, it's a small sample size, so a couple of bad outings will push that WHIP up. You would think that'll smooth out, obviously, over the course of an entire season. So, yeah, you know, gave up a few home runs, but that's all right.
That dominance is pretty, you know, those strikeouts are pretty impressive.
Yeah, 106 strikeouts in 81 innings. You'll take that, right? I mean, which is interesting because he's not a particularly big guy. You know, we're talking about Rich Hill, who walks up there at 6'5", 220. McCullough is 6'1", 205, but still dominant, as you said, with the curveball. So, well, good luck on getting one of those guys to pop for you. I always like doing multiple drafts with the same person because I know who they like. It's easy to say Kershaw because everybody would take Kershaw if they had the opportunity. Cruz and Stanton have consistently been your guys that you've talked about and you've drafted a couple of times. It's easy to like those guys as well. But you keep going down. Andrew Miller's on a lot of your teams.
I just can't resist him. I mean, I was trying not to draft him yesterday. But he just kept falling. And in the 12th round, David Price went like 3 picks ahead of him. And I got a feeling Andrew Miller might have more strikeouts than David Price. I mean, even if Price comes back, because by the time he gets ramped up, ready to go, you know, I mean, he's put up 120 strikeouts. And Cody Allen has historically been a horrible starter for like the first month or so. Those first 2 months, usually he stumbles out of the gate. He does correct things from like the end of May on. But, you know, there might be an opportunity there for Miller to even usurp even more saves. I think he's going to finish with at least 10 saves.
So, George, Matt's point about that is, I think you're nodding your head, so you're in agreement to some extent, but we don't think that, since we know that Cody Allen is a slow starter, Francona obviously knows this, he's not going to put his job on the line.
If I'm in a league with saves plus holds, which I am tonight, I'll take Miller first. Holds plus saves. If I'm in a league with straight
over
saves,
Allen.
Then
same.
I want Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the two guys you're talking about, Mike.
Yeah. I'm just right? Clarifying for the audience.
I'm not going to talk about Zach Britton out of nowhere. listen, I like them both. I think everything Matt said is correct. I think Matt's been on Miller for as long as I can remember. And I agree. I think Miller is going to have a ton of strikeouts. Maybe make up for that little WBC mistake to Nelson Cruz there. Maybe a little anger there. So I have no issues with them. Save plus holds, I love them because I think I've been 10 to 12. I think he's going to get in that range. And that's assuming Allen stays healthy. Of course, Allen gets hurt, then all bets are off the board. He'll get even more than that. And I think they'll use him more as a setup guy than they will Allen. I think when Allen's not the closer, it's probably because he's pitched too much. He's getting a day off. So, listen, I like both. I think Allen in some ways is underrated. Because Miller is so – probably because Miller is so electric. You know, he's 9 feet tall, slender, strikes everybody out. So we all know Andrew Miller came on for the big price last year that we forget how good Allen is too. But Matt's right about one thing. Allen is a historically slow starter. So it does make you also wonder, let's say Cleveland gets off to an average to slow start. And some of those losses are because Allen's blowing saves. They'll start to hear it, especially if Miller's pitching well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm asking. Like, we don't really think that his job is... I mean, Grant, assume that it's not a total disaster. He blows 4 saves in a row. Like, you got to bench a guy when that's happening. But we don't expect, even if he's off to a slow start, that he's going to lose the job.
No, but there are high expectations in Cleveland. This is, in my opinion, one of the best teams after the Cubs, maybe the Dodgers. You know, you got to have them in that conversation.
They were this close. I'm holding my fingers very close to one another. They're this close. And George and I were texting after last year, last October. We were texting after the Indians went up 3-1. I was like, God, to be a Cubs fan, it's terrible.
That would have been awful. Awful for, I mean, listen, Cleveland hadn't won forever, too.
Yeah,
so
I know.
It was awful for them as well.
I know. That's why I didn't like. I have many more friends that are Cubs fans than are Indians fans. I couldn't feel that bad for him because the Cubs, say they hadn't won, they had a really good season with this young nucleus. You know they'd be back in the mix. And frankly, that's what everybody was saying when they were down 3-1. They shouldn't panic. They had a good year. And they end up coming back, obviously, a tremendous comeback. But on the flip side of that, it was like the Indians were on the precipice of winning. They probably could have, should have won.
Yeah, I mean, when you're up 3-1, like you have to pull it out. I mean, Cleveland, unfortunately, You know, I hate to say they blew the 3-1 lead, but if you look back in the NBA, Cleveland was down 3 games.
That's the irony. That city pulls off a shocker in the NBA and conversely loses in a shocking manner in the World Series. So
they're still one of the best teams in the American League. They should be back. I don't know about the World Series. They'll make the playoffs.
You wouldn't have them as the favorite in the American League to win the pennant?
I think I need to know a couple things. What's up with Carrasco, Salazar, Kipnis, Brantley? It's a lot of injuries there. Price, I would need to know about as well. And I think one of those teams in the as far as that's concerned, Major League Baseball, I would really like to see Houston get Quintana. I think if they can get him, I think they could end up being the team to beat. But I think Cleveland's top three at the very least.
Yeah, if I'm the Astros, you have
if you had to put an amount of money that mattered to you on a team to win the pennant, who would that team be?
I was going to say Cleveland, but George.
I know you have a lot of Mariners on your squad.
George makes
Mariners.
A very good point about all these injuries. And it's to like critical players.
I mean, we're not going to know though.
I have Cleveland right now. I'm going to stick with Cleveland, but I think if Houston can pull off that Quintana trade, then they're in the driver's seat.
When do you think that trade happens? Closer to the deadline or soon?
I think it could happen. I think that trade could happen anytime this next week.
Okay.
Generally, historically, you don't see deals like that go down the last week.
It is kind of crazy. These teams are moving back from Florida and Arizona, and for that deal to happen would be crazy right now. That would be a bombshell of a trade. We know it's happening, but it'd be a bombshell at this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Houston's going to do it, like you say, they have Colin McHugh's dealing with the dead arm. He's probably going to start. He's behind in the schedule, so he's going to start late. I mean, what's Mike Fears? Joe Musgrove and the guy I drafted later on, Charlie Morton. I mean, Charlie Morton's velocity I took him in the reserve round of my auction Friday night. I've been getting some Charlie Morton shares. I mean, if he fails or gets hurt like he always does, I'll just drop him. But he's a guy to take a flyer on, in my opinion.
He's their number two right now. And I like, listen, I grabbed Charlie Morton late too, but my God, for him to be your number two shows you what your problem is. You don't have the depth there. Yeah. I would love Quintana on. I mean, listen, I'd like Quintana on any team. He's going to make the team better, obviously. I don't think it makes, like we talked about yesterday, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for him to go to Atlanta, only because I don't see why you're doing this when you know, things go well. You're not going to compete until probably 19. You know, so I don't see you doing that deal. But, man, I would love to see him go to Houston. And I think Houston should probably ante up and pay the price. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that maybe not quite the price that Boston paid for Sale, but I think you have to come up with 90% of it.
What major leaguers? We'll continue this. We'll extend this segment for another minute because this is a good discussion. What would it take? All prospects? Would there be major leaguers going in the other direction, or it's going to be all young guys?
It could be young major leaguers.
Yeah. Well, I think it's I forget his name. Tucker Preston, one of the guys, one of the Preston brothers. It would be him. They have the guys like Francis Marte, David Polino. And some other top.
They're going to want young. Listen. Chicago's going to trade Quintana. They're going to trade Robertson. They're going to trade Frazier. It's going to be a bad team. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to rebuild. So they're not going to want any kind of veterans. It doesn't make sense. That veteran will be gone by the time they get good. So it's going to be probably that one of their top two prospects. And then you're talking of their top six prospects. I expect three to go. You know, it's going to matter of settling on what three it is. I think Matt's right. I think Preston's going to be one. And then they'll work on the other guys. McCullers, I wouldn't shock if he goes two in this. Young player.
That's kind of what I was hinting at, yeah.
And you could make an argument, well, if you trade McCullers, aren't you just robbing Peter to pay Paul?
I think you are doing something like that. That's why I would just go straight prospects. You don't want to put some of these other guys up there.
He's been injured, but
it'll be fun to see what they end up doing. Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker, you mean Forrest Whitley, Francis Martez, Franklin Perez. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And I'm sure Chicago's trying to figure out also, okay, if we get, let's say we get a second base prospect. Well, then we don't need one for Todd Frazier. You know, they got to work that out as well with the teams that are interested in Frazier. Okay, what is this team? You know, if, let's say, I don't know, the Milwaukee Brewers are interested in Frazier. Okay, the Milwaukee Brewers have a third baseman to give us. You know, so we don't really want that from the team that we trade Quintana to, or the team we trade Robertson to. It's a whole
You have to be mapping it out and making sure you're getting the right positions from the right teams.
You don't see a team that has three players they can get. And if you count Sale, four players. In which they can trade and get heavy prospects for them. Chicago's going to go from, they already have, from one of the worst minor league systems to maybe the best, real, just like the Yankees did, real quick.
Yeah. Okay, good stuff. So we'll come back, continue to talk a little bit about Matt's team as we go here for the next 3 hours on Tout Wars coverage on the Roto Experts in the Morning. back, going over Matt Modica's NFBC main event draft from yesterday. He'll be having another main event draft today. That one will be another snake draft, 15 teams, 5x5, 30 rounds. And he has the number one overall pick again. Back-to-back days and big-time drafts. His number one overall pick. He's already told us he's going Mike Trout, where he went Kershaw yesterday. But sort of reviewing his team from yesterday, see, you got Brandon Crawford in the 16th round. That dude's hair is just taking on a life of its own. It's gross. It's always, like, shiny and, like, ratty looking coming out of his hat. It's just disturbing. But in any event, what are your thoughts? George, I'll go to you first. What are your thoughts on Brandon Crawford this season? I mean, this is a 16th round pick, but a guy that will obviously put up a lot of starts for you this year. Have to put up some numbers. So,
should I talk about his hair or his play?
Talk about his play. I covered the hair, I think.
Listen, I'm not a Brandon Crawford guy. I'm not going to go out of my way to grab him. That's not to say I won't have him on some teams as a middle infielder. But I don't see huge things come here where I go, oh, I got to go out and get Brandon Crawford. He's going to do this. I'll pass. I think he had a great WBC. He actually played well. I think we discussed this and argue about this. I forget which program it was that he could have been the MVP.
Yeah, he should have been.
Of it.
Who was?
Stroman was.
Yeah, well.
I mean, Stroman deserved it too. So.
Yeah, I just think I would have. I don't know. I could have gotten a couple of guys there. But I think when I think Brandon Crawford, I'm thinking, hey, he's outside my top 10. Shortstop is just deeper than we think it is. I mean, you look at it. You got Machado, Correa, Lindor, Seager, Villar, Bogart, Story, Segura, Russell. And then I'll sort of think about someone like Crawford. He's sort of in that same category with maybe like Nunez for better batting average, maybe some stolen bases. Anything Tulowitzki is going to bounce back. Swanson, who for me is a better major league ball player than he is a fantasy.
Do you think that about Brandon Crawford as well? I was actually going to ask you that. Do you think Crawford's probably a better major leaguer than he is fantasy?
Yes, but I think he does have fantasy value. I could see where you would like. Swanson's, look at it. What category are you looking for numbers from him? I mean, do you think he's going to 320 this year? I don't know about that. He had a small sample size last year. Yes, he hit over 300. I don't know if he can do that over 162 games. Don't know about that at all. So when I look at him, I don't even see a top 10 player at his position here. So it's hard for me to fall in love with them. But like I said, I don't mind getting him as my guard corner, my middle infielder. Don't mind it at all. But I don't expect – he's not a player that's going to win me my league. Because once again, I don't see one category where he's just going to – oh, wow, great. Got Crawford, stolen bases are now covered.
But is he going to be your starting shortstop there?
Yeah, I have – the thing with Brandon Crawford, why I definitely wanted Crawford on this team at the point where I got him, is he plays every day.
Yeah.
And in a 15-team league...
No trades.
With no trading, that is valuable. That is supremely valuable. I got Esdrubal Cabrera, two rounds later, I believe. And Cabrera's a guy that, I think with Kevin Long, he's taking on that new approach with the hitting. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to hit 20 homers again, but I think he can hit like 17, or even if he hits 15. And, you know, those are guys that I'm attracted to. I waited on that. I had Segura. He could play second base for me.
Yeah, you got Victor Martinez in the 17th round.
That I love.
George, you mentioned earlier, you don't know why people are off of Victor Martinez.
I mean, it's ridiculous. 17th round? He should go half that. He should be around 9, 10. This guy can hit. He's a professional hitter. It's what he's a professional hitter. I don't think he's going to hit over 30 home runs again, but I think that's a steal for Matt in that late. I think it's a... People freak out because he's only a DH. Oh, it clogs up my DH spot. I can't. You know what? You want the best players. Well, you're not taking David Ortiz because he clogged up your DH spot? Now, V-Mart is not David Ortiz, but the numbers are going to be there. The guy can hit. Do I worry somewhat that he'll, you know, the knees will act up, they'll pull the hammy, the groin? Sure.
No, maybe the DH only is a good thing.
Right. All he's going to do is run the bases. I know what I'm getting with him. I'm not expecting him to steal bases. I get that. He's going to score some runs. I understand, you know, for him to score from second base, he probably needs a triple.
I get it. I get it. He's slow, really slow guy. I get it.
Home run would certainly help there. Yeah. Boy, it's a tough room today.
It's early.
No wonder why Cigar is coming in late.
It's early. Our comedy has to warm up a little bit.
No, I'm done now. I'm not talking to you.
So Kevin Kiermaier is another player. Sorry, you wanted to wait. I'll let you comment on Victor Martinez.
No, just real quick. Another guy I love that does the same position as Martinez is Kendry Morales. But that's 6-round difference, and Victor Martinez is going to put up similar numbers.
Yeah. Kevin Kiermaier, Eric Thames, Randall Grichuk, Domingo Santana are the way he filled in his outfield there, George. Thoughts on any one of those players stand out to you?
Grichuk. Love Grichuk this year. I think he has a bounce back year. Look at some of his Matt's favorite sabermetrics. They were actually pretty solid last year. Just maybe didn't get the luck that he should have gotten. The hard hit percentage is still there. I like Krajicek a lot. I think he might have the year this year that people were expecting from him this last year, but no one's paying for it.
Who are you expecting the most out of that crew that I just named?
Well, I mean, I'm expecting Kevin Kiermaier to possibly go 20-30. So he's a guy that I really like. I know everybody's on Keon Broxton, who could possibly even be better than him. But I think there's a floor, there's a safeness with Kiermaier. He's got a very good success rate in the stolen bases. And like what George said about Krajicek, post-All-Star break, it was like 48.2% hard hit rate. That's like beyond
that's psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, good stuff. So, team's looking pretty good. I think you're going to like – I think you probably like where you sit right now, the way you built this team.
Yeah, you know, it's all about staying healthy and what you do in the waiver wires and picking up players. Yeah.
I think that's the key thing he said there. A draft is a good start for you. Just don't screw it up. Other than that, it's what the moves you make during the year and staying healthy.
It's got to be a competitive waiver wire, 15 teams with all those experts in the mix. So that's it. It's 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Matt Modica is going to be maybe hanging out for a couple of minutes, but he's got to get ready for his draft at 10 o'clock. Mike, Matt, and George, our number one down. Join us on the Roto Experts in the Morning after the break.